Today we're talking about religious faith, why some people lose their faith, while others go searching for the transcendental even when they can't stomach organized religion. Stephen Kotler had given up on church. If he thought about religion at all, it was something to sneer at. Then he came down with a terrible case of Lyme disease, and through a strange turn of events, he found religion in surfing. Kotler tells the story in his book, West of Jesus. I asked him when he got sick.
Sometime over the summer of 2000, and about 3 years later, by about 2003, I had managed to spend, you know, a good couple years in bed. I had lost all my money, my girlfriend, my apartment, my job, everything you pretty much lose, I lost, and spent most of that time while I was losing it on the couch.
Sounds like a recipe for despair.
It was a recipe for despair, and the doctors had kind of done everything they possibly could for me, and by the time it was all said and done, I was pretty much getting ready to shoot myself when a friend called and demanded I go surfing with her.
Now, what I don't understand about that, I have to confess, is that Lyme disease debilitates you. You have no energy. You can't do anything. Why would you agree to go surfing?
Well, the short answer is she was really annoying, and I was already in a bad mood to begin with, and rather than argue with her, I just gave in. I can't really actually answer that question. I mean, when she called and said, let's go surfing, I just started laughing because I really at the time couldn't walk across the room and was in so much pain. It was just insane. But, you know, I really was suicidal. And the thought that kind of tipped me over was the idea that, you know what? What the hell? You can kill yourself tomorrow. Go surfing today.
So you climbed in the car and you went surfing. And
I did.
From what you say, surfing saved your life.
Well, we got to the ocean, and I should add a caveat here. We went to a place called Sunset Beach, which, unlike its Hawaiian namesake, the California version is just about the wimpiest wave you can possibly find. And I got onto a board about the size of a 1957 Cadillac and sat out there for about 30 seconds when a wave came. And I think, you know, when I saw the wave, muscle memory is what took over. And I spun the board around, and I paddled a couple times, and I kind of wobbled to my feet. And suddenly I was in that wave, and for the first time in two and a half years, I wanted to be alive. And that feeling was so strong, I ended up catching four more waves that day. And those five waves totally disassembled me. I was, you know, I was in bed for 2 weeks after it. I didn't move. People brought me food. But on about the 15th or 16th day, the day I could move again, I found myself getting in my car and driving back to the ocean and doing it again.
Wow. What was it about being out on your surfboard that was so healing?
I can't tell you what it was. All I can tell you is sometime over the next, I would say, 4 to 6 months, I was, you know, I was surfing a little bit, not very much, and I started getting better. And that was really, really, really peculiar to me. And what was probably even more peculiar was the fact that I started believing in surfing as if it was some kind of new religion.
Wow.
That was far weirder to me than the fact that I was surfing myself back to health. I went into all of this as a really hardcore science geek, rational materialist. You couldn't bring up religion or spirituality in my presence without provoking a really bad reaction. And suddenly I was believing in surfing as if, you know, as if I'd been given a day pass to an Egyptian mystery school and I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah. Were you a good surfer before this? I mean, was surfing a big part of your life?
No, surfing, I learned to surf coming out of graduate school and surfed for about a year with a number of friends of mine. But about a year later, the guy who taught me to surf was killed in a motorcycle wreck. And after that, it just wasn't much fun. So I kind of stopped. There were a couple of adventures in between then and when I got back on the surfboard. But neither of those went particularly well. One of them was a near-drowning experience in Bali. And that was actually the near-drowning was the last time I'd been on a surfboard before the Lyme disease incident.
Now, you know, you are well aware that there are a lot of people who share this belief that surfing is something extraordinary. I don't know that they'd call it a religion or a spiritual experience, but they do believe there's some kind of mystical force in surfing.
Yeah. Well, it's not just surfing, by the way. It's all action sports in general. And, you know, such activities have a long history of mystical experiences. In the 1890s, a Swiss geologist put together a collection of mountaineering-inspired mystical experiences called Remarks on Fatal Falls, A couple years ago, a guy named Garth Barista put together Runner's High, a collection of Ecstasy and Motion. In between, there's all kinds of stuff. Charles Lindbergh, on a solo flight across the Atlantic, got to a point of absolute, total, and complete exhaustion, thought he was going to crash into the ocean, and all of a sudden, angels appeared on his wings, and he could see panoramically, and the angels guided him into Paris. So it goes back for a great ways. In terms of surfing, a couple of years ago, Surfing Magazine put, "Is Surfing the New Religion?" on their cover, and the reason they said they did this, and this is a pretty conservative magazine as such things go, is because they say they get so many letters from readers every month claiming they have had spiritual experiences while surfing that they can fill a storeroom each and every month, and they just assumed that wasn't what happened to people who read, you know, Tennis Weekly or Gun and Ammo.
I had heard about the runner's high, but this sounds different. And I mean, people, there's a consistency to this, this whole thing about the force they call the conductor, for instance.
Well, the conductor is a very different thing. The conductor is a story I actually heard first in Indonesia back in 1995 when I had that near-fatal accident. What basically happened is I fell off a wave that was the size of a small building, and that wave landed on top of me, and about seven more landed on top of that, and the reef was really close underneath the surface, and I was beaten up and bruised and bleeding and vomiting water. And when I finally made it back to the boat, which was anchored outside the break, this Aussie surfer I had met down there kind of paddled over to me and said, "Are you all right, man?" And I said, "Well, you know, except for the bleeding and the puking, I'm just fine, thanks." And he said, "Yeah, it looks like the conductor had his way with you." And I said, "What the hell are you talking about, the who?" And he told me this very, very peculiar story about a surfer who controlled the weather, who conducted the waves with a baton made of human bone. And I kind of filed that away under, you know, aquatic hippie nonsense and forgot about it. And about 10 years later, about 6 months after I learned to surf again, after the Lyme disease incident, I was in Mexico surfing hurricane swell on what was kind of a last-ditch attempt to stay sane, because, you know, your life, even with your health coming back, you know, you don't spend 3 years in bed without a lot of consequences in your life, and my life wasn't very good. So I went to Mexico after a string of really bad things that happened to me, and I was surfing hurricane swell, which was a stupid thing for me to be doing, and I nearly drowned again, and I was back on a boat, and I was bleeding, and I was recovering from this horrible beating I had taken at the hands of, you know, seven or eight waves, and a guy named Ben, a New Yorker I had met down there, paddled over to me, said, "You all right, man?" And I said, "God, you know, except for the bleeding and the puking, I'm just fine, thanks." And he said, "Yeah, it looks like the conductor had his way with you." And I said, "What the hell did you say?" And he told me the exact same story. And at this time, you know, obviously it had far more resonance because I'd already had my kind of miracle comeback thanks to surfing. And I was already starting to feel, you know, pretty strange spiritual feelings towards the sport. And here was this story that kind of, you know, it had all this myth and this magic in it. It was a classic Greek myth, but it was somehow tucked inside of modern surf culture. None of these things made any sense to me. But obviously this kind of spirituality has been with the sport for a long, long time.
And you know, I understand that, but doesn't it still sound to you as it does to me, like the kind of thing that some hippie surfers who maybe popped a few extra pills might have made up?
For sure. And there's a couple things I can tell you about that. One of the things, you know, that I talk a lot about these days is, you know, the intersection of sports and science and spirituality. And, you know, we don't know what goes on in the brain of a surfer while they're surfing because our imaging technology isn't at the point that we can take those pictures yet. But we do know what goes on in the brain during periods of meditation. And the link between the two is concentrated focus. To ride a wave, because there are so many moving parts on a wave and so many incredible variables, requires a laser-like pinpoint focus, and it's the exact same laser-like pinpoint focus that shows up in meditation. And, you know, interestingly, one of the ways that kind of surfing spirituality manifests itself is a very common feeling among surfers of a oneness with the ocean. It happens fairly frequently during tube rides, and you feel at one with the ocean, which sounds a lot like, you know, what Buddhists call absolute unitary being, which is their sense of oneness with everything, or what, you know, Franciscan nuns or Catholics talk about as unio mystico, which is a sense of oneness with God's love or oneness with Jesus. And we also know, you know, why these things happen in terms of meditation. We know why these things happen in the brain because a number of different neuroscientists have begun, you know, doing imaging studies of people during meditation. And one of the things that they find is that during profound concentration, the right parietal lobe, which is the portion of the brain that separates self from other, stops accepting new information and stops putting out information. But when this happens, be it through meditation or surfing, after a very short period of time, The limbic system, which is kind of the emotional system, in every millisecond or so asks a bunch of safety or security questions. And one of those questions is, where am I? What's going on? Where am I? Gets directed to the right parietal lobe. Now, the right parietal lobe, for people who have had, say, a stroke or brain damage, they can't do something like, they can't sit down on a chair because they don't know where their leg ends and the rest of and the chair begins. It's that kind of system. So in surfing, you have the kind of the combination of the adrenaline rush because of the danger of the experience, coupled with the pinpoint focus that you get in meditation. So you have a combination of all these neurochemicals that show up during so-called spiritual experience, and they show up, you know, with great frequency during surfing. So yes, I agree, it does sound like a lot of nonsense when you hear surfers talking about spiritual experiences, but when you kind of reduce it to the level of brain chemistry, well, it's the same thing that's going on. You just kind of got to realize that the brain is a really conservative organ, so the same systems get used over and over and over again.
So you don't want to call this a belief in God, this change in your life?
Well, if you want to, you know, push me into a corner, I will tell you that I do believe there's some level of consciousness in the universe, kind of, you know, more than I did before I kind of got started on all these things. But, you know, God, life, death, all these words are things that we're so certain we know what the definitions mean, and I don't even think we know what any of these words mean. I'm not quite sure. I mean, just because there's a level of consciousness in the universe, does that mean we have a, you know, benevolent creator? I don't know. I mean, it certainly tips the scales a little bit in that direction, but, you know, one way or the other, that's not a question we can answer yet, but we at least can move in that direction in a much more interesting, kind of lucid and clear-headed fashion than we could 20 years ago.
Stephen Kotler. His book is called West of Jesus, Surfing, Science, and the Origins of Belief.